I've been doing both. Now, your feet. By the way, I want you to know that is a self-portrait last year. No, really, up here near Heart Lake. Also, we're going to talk about make sure when you go on an overnight trip that you're taking some kind of a sandal or a water shoe for those stream crossings. Because I know I had to, on the way to Lyman Lake last year, take off the boots a couple times to get up there. And I just, you throw those on, they come drag your feet off and slide the boots back on. So some things, some tips for taking care of your feet. First of all, we'll talk about your boots and things. Remember, leather boots, they may last longer, provide more support, more protection, but they're probably going to take a little longer to break in. There's a lot of boots that have a combination of fabric and leather. They're usually a little less expensive, can be a little lighter. They don't take as long to break in. Anytime you're dealing with shoes or boots, whatever feels comfortable. Also, go into a store, try them on. When you're trying them on, make sure you put the same size of hiking socks on, you know, like a wool or some kind of a blend sock that you're going to use in your hiking boots. Use practice hikes to find out those hot spots. Do you know what a hot spot is?
Where you get a blister.
It is a pre-blister. So if you don't take care of the hot spot, it turns into a blister. So you want to find those kind of things. I went on a hike with a gentleman a few years ago. He went out and was really proud of these really great Italian leather boots that cost him a couple hundred bucks or something. And he had walked around the neighborhood of just a little bit in them. And I still remember the kind of pain he was in from these awful blisters. And it was probably about a half mile of the trip. He had to stop. And we put some Band-Aids on. And then it kept getting worse and worse. And make sure that you... particularly with a new pair of boots, you spend a lot of time, make sure that you get them thoroughly broken in. Also, make sure you're trimming your toenails. Because if you have the toe box at the end, if it's kind of tight, you can get ingrown toenails. One tip to prevent ingrown toenails. Everyone likes to round their toenails. You're better to try to cut them more straight across, especially when you're doing the hiking. That means those little rounded corners, they tend to grow in, but if the edges are out above the level of the tissue, that they tend to just grow on out and don't grow in. So you're familiar with moleskin, which is kind of a fuzzy adhesive back material that you can put on a hot spot, or you can put if you have a blister, put the Band-Aid on first. Because I see a lot of people, they take this sticky adhesive and they stick it right on the blister. Then when they take it off, it rips the top right off the blister. So put a Band-Aid on first, then you put the moleskin on to protect over the top of that. Stop and check for those hot spots. What about wearing tennis shoes out hiking?
Short hikes.
Depends on the trip. So if you're on a nice, even trail, not going too far, sure, tennis shoes are great. But if you're taking a longer hike over more rugged terrain, you'll want to look for the boots. Okay, clothing. Now, the difference between hiking and backpacking, so let's say you're wearing jeans and your cotton t-shirt, and you're taking your trip up to Heart Lake, and it starts to rain. Assume everything works out fine, what's the worst going to happen? So you're going to be wet for maybe a couple hours, you come get back here and you change. So probably not the end of the world. However, let's say you're spending the night. You've got your cotton on. It takes forever to dry. So you want I hike, this is one of my hiking shirts. You know, it's got all those new polyester blend kind of things. And they dry rather quickly. And probably a good idea to have most of your clothing in that category. Just remember, jeans and cotton things, they're heavy, they don't breathe, they're difficult to layer. The dry, wicking type things, pants that zip off into shorts, it seems like about everyone I've seen around here has those, so I don't even have to mention that. But that really is nice because a lot of times you start off in the morning, it's cold, you want to have something on your legs, then you take a break, zip those legs off, and you have shorts. We mentioned the short sleeve t-shirts. Layering the clothing, we really think of three main layers. First of all, a good base layer that tends to the dry, wicking something like this, then a fleece or something similar as a thermal middle layer, and then an outer breathable shell, preferably something that's breathable. It doesn't have to be Gore-Tex. There are so many other brands now that you don't have to buy Gore-Tex brand, but breathable works much nicer. Layer, layer, layer. So make sure, we just talked about making sure you have the layers. How much should you bring on your trip? A lot of that's just experience. Or at least talk to people who've made similar trips. It's such a tough balance when you're making these trips between how much do you bring versus, you know, cutting yourself short on something, whether it's clothes or food or some other things. And I know I usually hike with a lot of camera gear. My pack is always much heavier than it should be. You know, I saw some of the people getting on Lady of the Lake that were on the trail crew up here. You know, they have those little accordion sleep pads, you know, that are about this big. You know, I have the inflatable one, you know, the self-inflating one, yeah. So that's me. I like that little extra comfort. Here's some ideas for a 7 to 10 day trip. Pretty much, you're getting a couple things, so you always have one thing that you can wear, and you have another in reserve. And I guess in a lot of cases, if you get to the right spot, you know, you can always rinse it out in the stream, hang it up, and especially if you're using the quick dry things, they'll usually be dry by the next day. So just some ideas of some things there. We talked about the raincoat. Here's the thing. It's like the dollar signs. First of all, vinyl raincoat. You can find those really, really cheap. Mm-hmm. But guess what? They get hot really quick and they don't breathe. And probably like ponchos are, I mean, they're okay to take. I mean, I think I even have like a little emergency one that's like, folds down next to nothing just in case I need one. But if I really know I'm going to need a raincoat, I'm going to, I've got a breathable fabric raincoat. So, especially when you're hiking, that's the thing. Temperature when you're hiking is, I'll tell you what, today, I went partway up the Holden Lake Trail. And you know what the weather was this morning? It was like trying to rain a little, and then it was nice and sunny, kind of like it was all day. And so first of all, I was going short sleeves. So I started going up the hill. I get pretty hot. So I got kind of cold. So I brought a fleece, and I put the fleece on, and then I'm too hot. And so then, so getting temperature regulation is always key. Okay, let's look at a sleeping bag. The one thing, you either have synthetic or down filling. So what's the advantages of those? Of either one of those?
Synthetic is still warm when it's wet, usually.
That's it. You can see that right here. Down does not insulate when it's wet. Down is light, it's comfortable, it's warm, but if it for some reason gets wet, it doesn't, you're sunk with a down sleeping bag. So, and one thing, there are temperature ratings on these. The warmth rating is typically overrated. I know, because I have a plus 20, and I've been, you know, in 35, 30 degrees. I'm pretty cold at night, and I need to put something else on when it's down that cold. So these ratings are a little bit overrated. Now, they say generally minus 20 to maybe plus 20 for the winter, fall. Kind of depends on where you are. The plus 20, I'd say I wouldn't go real high in the mountains with a plus 40 though. Waterproof compression bag. In fact, I mentioned compression bag for clothing. Are you familiar with the compression?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Really, you stuff your clothes in, stuff your sleeping bag in, and then it's got these little straps, cinch it right down. So you don't lose the weight, but you lose the space.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I already mentioned lightweight foam pad or a self-inflating pad. And also you want to get a bag for your pad. My pad I keep on the back of my backpack, and so having it in a bag is really important, because anytime my bag's all shredded up, and my sleep pad would be if I didn't have a bag on it. The tent. Okay, remember it's your shelter in the storm. Here's the key thing. Three season versus four season tents. So why not just have a four season tent? Good for all season. They're very heavy. One more thing. You go out on a really nice evening. Now, the one thing, I love to try to get this, the rain fly off my tent. The only problem is so often in the mountains that you have a lot of dew. And you wake up, even if it's a beautiful night out, you know, your sleeping bag's soaked because of all the dew. So it's usually probably a good idea to keep your fly on. And if you have a four-season tent, it'll be a sweat, you'll be a sauna, and you have condensation dripping off your tent because the four-season tent is designed to keep you, to keep everything out, keep the elements out in the same way. It keeps, you know, the condensation, your breath and everything inside the tent. Nice to have a door for each occupant. I have the REI half dome that has a nice door on each side, a little vestibule, a little area that you can, you know, put your boots and things. Not necessary, but it's nice. One thing that really helps your tent, makes your tent last a lot longer, is a footprint or just a pad underneath your tent. It also keeps a lot of the moisture from the ground off as well. Now, I've heard of people, Tyvek, which is the stuff they wrap houses in? I've heard people to go find a piece of Tyvek, which is really light, and use that. I mean, it doesn't tie into your tent quite as well, but if you can find a piece of that real inexpensive, that looks nice as a footprint. Now, you've heard of the 10 essentials. Okay, we're looking at these. These are the kind of the updated 10 essentials. Instead of just using the item, we have a general category. So we have something for navigation, map, compass, and may I add a GPS unit. And yes, I do hike with my GPS unit. When I'm not using it for geocaching, I use it for navigation. I want you to know, I went up and found that geocache without my GPS. I used the clue. By the way, we were talking about geocaching, and up in Winston, there's a geocache. And I looked at the clue, and the clue was, it's under the left front fender. So I said, all I got to do is find an old car. And I looked all around, and finally looked out there, and is that a car out there? And I found it. So if you can find an old car under the left front fender, you won't even need the
GPS.
Yes. I'll give you a hint. It's up in the back corner of it up there. So, okay. Sun protection. Sunglasses, sunscreen. I mean, this can be pretty significant, especially if you're out on a snow field and things. You need the sunglasses. Also, sunscreen. You know, up here in the higher altitudes, you'll find that a lot more sun rays, you know, there's not as much haze to block the sun. So you can get a lot worse sunburn at the high altitudes. Insulation in the way of extra clothing. Illumination, some kind of a headlamp or flashlight. First aid supplies, we'll talk more about them. Probably at least a couple different fire sources. Matches, I mean, I even... This is another one of my lectures. You know those like little torch that you know that you light the barbecue with?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I started carrying that. I was hiking one time, and I thought I had a couple different kinds of matches. First of all, the matches that need to have the box that you. Well, I didn't bring the box, you know. So, yeah. Yeah, I finally had to go over to some other people. Unfortunately, there were other people. But, is there any way we can borrow a couple matches? So from then on, I've always made sure I have at least a couple different kinds of matches. I even have a fire starter. So repair kit and tools. Make sure that you have a little bit of extra food. So pack your food and then throw a few extra things in just to make sure you're covered. Hydration. And I have a couple different sources. Of course, I have a water filter. Mm-hmm. I also bring some iodine tablets as my backup emergency. I've never had to use them. I don't really want to use them. But if for some reason my filter breaks, I guess, of course, you can always boil too. So, and then emergency shelter, that could just be, I usually carry one of like those space blankets, you know. So Some other stuff you could or should have.
Some kind of a pocket knife, of course, insect repellent, a whistle. In fact, I was just looking in Backpacker magazine, and it's how much farther a whistle can be heard than voices and things. So a whistle. We already talked about the compression sacks for your clothes. Always have some extra I carry a variety of garbage bags. I have one big one that I use if I need to put over my pack, but I also have various things for making sure that we're carrying everything out. Toilet paper, you can kind of see just a variety of things there. What you need to do, go online, find like checklist for backpacking. Get a few different ones. Then you make your own. Because you have certain things that you carry, and that make sure you see, okay, this is what other people are carrying, and then make your own list. In fact, speaking of this is last summer, this is my daughter, and she had to put her Crocs on here to cross this little stream. Now, this was in the afternoon. This is on her way up to Lyman Lake. If I remember, when we came back a little earlier. And we on one of the, I think it was this stream, we didn't even have to put the shoes on because, you know, we know in the afternoon that melt off gets a little bit. I was worried about that today when I went up to Holden, but it was only a couple hours difference. It was that stream on the way up there that it's running pretty good. You got to kind of bounce over those rocks, and if there was a little bit more water there, it would have been a little bit more. Hiking poles. In fact, can I come to the next one here? Hiking poles. There's been a lot of studies done to show how much hiking poles can take the stresses off of the lower extremities, off the knees and things. I always hike with poles, especially I think coming down the hill to dampen your forces coming down the hill. Can also give you a little hand if you get on snow and things. There's a lot of, yes?
Quick hiking pole question. So my son, Nordic ski champion, it's like, Mom, you've got to use them alternating. And I'm like, I don't care, whatever gets me up the hill.
I would say whatever gets you up the hill.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know. Thanks.
Yeah, he passed me on the way going up the whole lake this morning.
Yeah, he's so fast, wasn't he?
Yeah. Okay, backpacks. Now, this is my, this is what I call my day pack. Because I got this because, and this is... Okay. Well, my overnight pack is much bigger than this.
But you can actually carry a larger overnight pack.
Yeah. So you can see this is 50-liter pack, and I like the size of this. Now I can stuff camera gear and stuff in here. And again, I've never gone overnight. Now I could probably do an overnighter, maybe. But you know, for me, it takes almost as much gear one night as because I can maybe get away with taking the second set of clothes, but you know, all my other stuff that I bring, I take it on every trip usually, you know, my first aid kit and things. So now, is there anyone that still has an external frame backpack? Okay, now you're telling me that's you got the old. I put this in internal frame preferred, but external will work. Now, some of the advantages, though, of an internal frame, of course, that frame's built inside. It hugs your body better because it's closer. You have a lower center of gravity. You can carry more gear. Because it's closer to your body, you get a little bit better balance. But the external frames are still, you can get a lot more gear on the outside of an external. Latch it onto the external frame. Okay, so you want to make sure the key thing is it rides well on your hips because most of your weight should be on your hips. If it's too short, you'll find that too much of the weight's going to be on your shoulders. If the pack is too long, it's only going to be on the hips. Anyone recognize that spot?
Yeah, so the aspect.
That's exactly where it is. I had my daughter pull it. I love these trees here. I got to get a shot of you in those trees there. Okay, backpack should ride on your hips, should carry about 80% of the load. And the shoulders should get about 20% for a good balance.
And across the legs.
And then you get the sternum strap to kind of hold everything down.
Is that kind of load different when you snowshoe?
When you're snowshoeing. I guess it depends upon your conditions, too, that...
Because I have taken a pack snowshoeing that I literally could have carried fine, and I could hardly move. I was dying after a mile.
Huh.
And it wasn't, you know, and it's my favorite backpacking pack, and I was like, oh my God.
Now, could it be the way it was loaded that day, too? I mean,
that's
sometimes...
True.
Sometimes
that didn't occur to me.
Sometimes the way you arrange your load, too, in the pack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly, like, you get, you know, things that are, you know, too heavy, too low, or too high, kind of, so you have to kind of work with, yeah. Now, if most backpacks say they fit a range, so if it says it's like a 20-inch, what that is a measurement. You find the bump on the back of your neck, which is the 7th cervical vertebrae, which is right there, and then the top of your hip bones is the iliac crest. So, and then that is considered, so they can take a measuring tape and measure that. And most backpacks say they fit a certain range of sizes. So, and so probably the best thing, sometimes you can have someone that they, you know, that knows what they're doing can, you know, can measure you and figure that out. Okay, this one really varies. Maximum weight. Okay. They say somewhere between 1/4 up to, and that's kind of really stretching, because think of someone that weighed 150 pounds, carrying 50 pounds. Because I know in my packs, I weigh more than 150 pounds. When I would put 50 pounds, that's a load. So, I mean, that's kind of stretching the high end of things. So probably about 25% of your body weight is probably more, or even less if you can, is more recommended. Make sure you distribute your gear if you're packing with people. So if like someone has the tent, maybe they're going to get a little more of the food and things. Like we said, make sure everything's got good waterproof bags. We mentioned the hiking poles. There is a journal article in 2007 that said that medically, or I should say scientifically, showed that it reduces the force on the joints by using the poles. And I don't, probably, he's, in some ways, probably, if you're out on a nice, even trail, that kind of thing is probably best. But I know sometimes when I'm going uphill, it's kind of like skiing. You'll start double pulling then, right?
Exactly.
Sometimes, yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Hey, what does the pack for balance, horizontal? What does horizontal distribution
okay.
mean?
So basically, and in fact, I'm guilty of this sometimes. It means that sometimes if you're putting heavier things on one side, two of the pack, so that you're not, you know, so
okay.
horizontal. Yeah. So we're not, yeah, side to side.
And they give you the rule of thumb on. You know, how heavy things on the bottom.
You know what? I was looking at a lot of that information. There's a lot depends on if it's a day where you're primarily going more uphill or downhill. I do know that they like to keep something like keep the heavier things a little bit closer to you, closer to your body.
Oh, that makes sense. So it doesn't pull you
back. Right. But there's a lot of. Does anyone have any other rules of thumb? A lot of times I put it in so it fits, but then, you know, you got to make sure. The other thing is you don't want to make sure sometimes you're getting things too high. I'd rather keep things down here a little bit lower, some of the heavier things lower. You know, like around your hips where you're stronger with the stronger muscles. Yeah. Now, this is just a hypothetical trip. Now, here's the one thing that you already see. For example, 5 miles round trip to Monkey Bear Falls, right? So it's said what? 2 hours. That's what it says on the map. 2 hours.
I mean, that's keeping a pretty good pace. Mm-hmm. You know, for some people think, oh, okay, we're going to go out there and, like, you got to keep up a pretty good pace to make it out there and back if you're going 5 miles in 2 hours. So, I mean, and the same thing with this. You can look at a map. So often I've looked at a map. Now, this is actually looking at a, elevation profile here. And so, but normally we look at a map, we don't see this. We're just looking at a line that goes like that. You know, kind of like if you're, it looks like, you go to Heart Lake, and then just right beyond that is Lyman Lake, you know. Little do we know that we got to go switch back, up. Yeah.
You have a possible map.
Exactly. And so it we can look at this, but always have a little fudge factor in your schedule. You know how the airlines have fudge factors? Their schedule, you know, there I say, you know, it says 4 hours flying time, and then the pilot says, you know, our flight will take us 3 hours and 15 minutes today. It's like, so they always put that fudge factor in the schedule. And the same thing here, you know, if you're finding you need to get someplace when you're doing your pre-trip planning, unless you really got to get someplace at a certain time, you're probably better to ease it off and enjoy yourself a little bit more than to try to, you know. So this was a hypothetical one that I found for estimating times and things, how long based on the mileage and things. But I guess what I'm saying is always look at know what your elevation gain is and also know what your hiking speeds are. Hydration system. We already talked about the water purification and things. Tell you what, one of my best investments that I just love, because I love drinking a lot of water along the trail. And a lot of times, I don't like to have to stop, take my pack off, you know, or it's like, oh yeah, could you get that bottle off my pack, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, this thing's in the top of my pack, you know, my hose is coming down like this, I just grab my hose and take a drink. So, and this is in this particular pack, I think it has a spot, it does. It's got a spot in here, but that just takes up space in my main compartment, so I just put it up in the top. It's not really designed to go on the top of it, but so that's my tip. That's one of my tips, because I love to drink along the trail. Okay. And so make sure when you're on a trip that you know what the water situation is ahead, because in some cases you get up here and you're expecting water and you don't get it, and it's a serious problem. Dehydration is probably the most common, easily prevented ailments on the backpacking trip, even in cold weather. You got to keep drinking even when the weather's cold. Of course, your muscles are going to cramp up and headaches and all sorts of things. Never drink from an untreated water source, except if you're in Norway, right?
Yeah, exactly. Except if you're
way above the tree line, and there's no animals around. Yes. But in most of our cases around here, there's a lot of things. So basically, boiling it, chemical, or filtering.
Now, is 1 minute really enough?
I've seen that a lot of sources. I've seen sources that say a little longer than that too. That could be a little bit on, but we're talking a big rolling boil too, not just a few little bubbles too.
Right.
So, but I've also seen 3 minutes on that as well too. So this is one source. Okay. I gotta show you this here. Okay, see that stream right there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is from back. I wouldn't get this out of the library. I'd read this before. In fact, I was just reading this just a week or so ago. When drinking from which water source is more likely to be fatal? Okay, this is right. May Backpacker Magazine. A remote cattle pond with thick brown water and several cow patties on the bank and no flow. Okay, that's choice A. The next one, a beaver pond flecked with mosquito larvae.
Ew.
The next one, a clear alpine tarn free of moss fed by a stream flowing from a long closed mine.
Mine.
Oh. Now, this is there. Now, I shot this picture earlier in the week. Look at this. There's nothing in that stream.
I mean, there's stuff on the side. There's nothing. It is. Now, obviously, you know where this is going, right? There's the source. Okay? There's the mine portal. This is up on the hill, the mine portal, and this is the water coming out. And this, I mean, once it's flowing, it doesn't look quite as bad. I mean, here it's kind of, you know, white and murky. But it's funny that I just read that and I laughed when I saw this, because it's like, that's the same thing I just read in Backpacker magazine. That's most likely to be fatal. It's worse than drinking, you know, brown water out of, you know, out of a cattle pump. You know. Yeah. So
which is best?
I was just saying, what's the top choice out of the other two?
I'm not sure which would be the best. I think none of those are, but I think we're talking about the key word was fatal. Yeah, on that one. So I thought that was kind of interesting that I threw those slides in there after because I read that and I chuckled because. It's like, okay, stove. You can carry the propane canisters. I actually have just a white gas, which is like the Coleman fuel. And just make sure that the cooking area is free of debris, and try to do it on a rock is probably the best bet. The kitchen. You know, I'm a little behind here, so. Some things that you can have for food. You know what, I get to be honest, when it comes to cleanup, a lot of people really love to do the backcountry gourmet thing. And you know, they package all this stuff and they make a nice big meal. And you know, and that's really great. The problem is when it comes to do your cleanup, I hate to say it, I rely upon a good old Mountain House and the others. You know, you pour the water in, you eat it right out of the pouch, you seal it up, and you throw it in your bag. You know, it may not taste as good as those nice meals that you've prepared, but... now, the foil, I just discovered these. In fact, we got these as our trip for coming up here last year. These foil-packing seafood and chicken.
Yeah, they're room temperature.
Yeah, room temperature. You put them in your pack.
Like in the Boundary Waters in Minnesota, you cannot take cans in. You get a huge fine if you take cans in. But you can take the foil pack.
Right. So those are
good seafood stuff.
Of course. And then just a variety of other things. Don't keep the food in your tent. We're going to talk more about that. Don't keep the food around your tent, please. First aid. Here's another one. Worth the price of admission. Here we go. My first aid kit. Now, obviously, being a sports medicine guy, I would kick myself forever if I didn't have at least the majority of the things. Now, this is my actual first aid kit. Now, this is pretty big for a first aid kit. Now, most people have like these little tiny packets, you know, with a couple band-aids in it and things. Now, if I remember right, I think we had some little Disney juice glasses that came in this container. And I always try to find something. Let's see. Now, these are the things like sheets and pillowcases come. They have little zippers on them. Don't throw those away. Save those for, you know, like this has, you know, my I think it's time for a new one here. You know what that probably is? I think it's actually been up against my like 95% DEET stuff here. I'm serious, actually.
Dissolve it.
Yeah. And headlamp and things. But the nice thing with this, it's not like you have something where I'm like, looking here. Oh, there's my whistle right there. So I can go right down and find it because it's clear. Same thing here. I can look around here. I can see everything I have. You want to know what this is right here? In fact, you know what? You come tomorrow night. It's my wilderness first aid, and I'll take it up. It's called a SAM splint.
Oh.
Okay. Now, yes, you can still use it. You can still get the little twigs and make a splint, but this is so much easier to use. It's foam-covered aluminum, so it's really lightweight. So it's the same thing. A lot of ambulance units use that. And so anyways, I got a lot of stuff in there, but I wouldn't go anyplace. I usually hike with the doctor, and he knows that I'm bringing all the odds and ends.
Okay. room with the, see, I told you I had room with a view. Okay. So now, a lot of people who aren't outdoors people look at that and say, oh, but you know what? It's kind of heaven. Yeah, it is. Yeah, when you have the other option, that's really nice. Exactly. The small shovel, and again, you do want to go at least 6 inches. Now, here comes the issue. A lot of people also recommend that you carry your toilet paper out.
Well, it's kind of the rule some places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to.
Right. So,
I was just going to say, my son's so good. He talks about, he's an outdoor ed, and he can talk about it with, like, no blushing, and I still blush. But those wag bag things are so great. The ones for, you probably have to use them in the boundary waters, too. But they're, they're boaters. They're for boaters.
Oh, okay.
Like for, hand launch, craft boaters, because
right.
They make it so much nicer to carry it out.
Yes.
Just so much better.
Yes, they would. Just make sure, we won't go through all the details of preparation because we're just down to about 5 minutes here or so. But do your research, get your gear. Probably the biggest thing, I mean, it takes a while to get ready to take a backpacking trip. You really need to, because it's like, oh, I forgot. Unfortunately, I've never forgotten anything really big, but sometimes that's why you need that checklist, because you tough shoot. Bear safety. Now, you can look at a lot of sorts of information about what to do. Now, I remember you told me about how you talked nice to the bear.
Oh yeah.
Now, most people usually say just kind of stand tall and make some noise. I mean, obviously your method has worked. He just kind of talks. He talks nice and kind of backs away. Now, here's the one thing that is for sure: you do not run. Okay. No matter who you are, not if you're a Jamaican sprinter, you're not going to outrun a bear. And the other tough thing is, a lot of times the black bears will bluff charge. Do you know how tough that would be? They're coming at you, and you just go.
Yeah.
So, don't fake death. So basically, just make sure that if you're between the sour cubs, back away and make sure. Yes.
Now, does this change from the type of bear? I grew up in Alberta, and so black, grizzly, brown.
Do you know what? I have heard. Okay. I have heard that because we're looking
grizzly,
at
the
grizzly. I have heard death. Grizzly. Yeah, fake yes,
death, yeah.
you can fake the death on the more
they
on the grizzly
bit stuff.
Yeah,
that's what they say.
I never tried it.
To that.
Yeah,
I've seen
and
all
you're covering.
Kinds
yeah, and you're just
bears,
covering
but...
yourself up on the grizzlies. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good point. Excellent point.
No flash photography.
No flash photography.
No. Don't mess with bears.
How about berry pollen?
Yeah. Oh, the talking. By the way, that's a talking deer up at Hart Lake.
Where?
like Mr. Ed, the talking deer.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, one thing I was going to mention, we call the Bermuda Triangle. And we have food prep in one corner. Now, fire. I put fire in there because, most of the time around here, that's the one thing with backpacking. You don't get a campfire. It's a downside. It's a small downside, but it's the only thing that in most places, unless you're going really early in the year and things, in certain spots, you're not going to have a fire. But basically, your food prep in one corner, do the cleanup in another, and hang the bear bag in the third corner, and the tents are outside that triangle. So just make sure that you're away. That's the toughest thing because you have all your food, you got all your stuff, and you got to carry it clear over there, and your camp's right here. It's very tempting. So no food or smellables too. That includes any kind of. First of all, don't bring deodorant on a trip, but it'd be anything that's toothpaste or that has a smell. There we go. Yeah.
They say keep these things away, but there's, you know, certain things that have a smell to them. And I know that I always hang, kind of like you brush your teeth, you know, and then put it in the bag and hoist the bag up.
Do you have a trick for hanging bear bags?
Well, because it depends on where you are. Now, if you have trees that have, now if you're really high, they need to be, what is it, four to six feet out and at least 10 feet high. Yeah. So,
that's really hard in some places.
It is. And in some places, they make you carry the bear canister.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I love it because my problem is I have a horrible arm. And I can't throw it. I've had that trouble.
I cannot throw the line over the, even where they have the pre-hung ones, I can't get the line over. So, there's nothing wrong with using a bear canister, right? You just have to keep it at.
There's lots of places. I know, I think a lot of places in California, like Yosemite and things, you can't go in without a bear canister.
Okay.
I know that when
I'm willing to carry it. I can use it.
Yes, absolutely. Obviously, just put it away from camp. Keep it away from camp, but, okay. Trailhead security. Just remember, whenever you're going someplace, don't leave stuff in the car because there are those people out there that just prowl cars. They know people are gone, many cases for a period of time. And so don't leave anything. I know people that are regular hikers that buy old crummy cars and leave them unlocked.
I was going to ask, is there any evidence that leaving your car unlocked is...
Well, I guess it could, save a broken window. It depends on your car.
Right.
But then again, if someone wants to open it up, I don't know.
Yeah,
yeah, that's just frustrating. So, we were talking about this before. Now, you can see here in the morning, this is a pretty easy cross. We get a nice runoff of water, and there's enough water there for the kayaker to be coming down there, flying down there with it. So always take that in consideration. I'm just going to zip through these really quick. You know the Leave No Trace. They have really nice information, nice little booklet over at the Hike House on Leave No Trace. I say that because I take my fitness specialist students on a hike each spring. And two springs ago, I just said, we're going to make sure that we leave no trace on this hike. And it turns out these boys were picking the balsam root flowers. And so fortunately, I was the last one down, so I was taking them all off and things. So we had a nice long talk, and they had a long paper on what leave no trace is. And so sometimes you can just say leave no trace, but the people that cut switchbacks, there's a long list. So make sure that you've planned ahead, prepackaging food and preparing for emergencies. Make sure you travel and camp on durable surfaces. This is a tough one. Muddy trail. Deep muddy trail. Okay, but what they're saying is don't be going around that, because that impacts more. Those are kind of tough ones, but I guess at least if it's not too bad, try to stay on things that are already impacted. Try to find places that have already been camped on, not on new spots. Make sure pack it in, pack it out.
It's impossible some places with the traffic of hikers. I have a cloudy pass. They've moved things over, keep moving over, they're still good. Ditches like that.
Yes.
Not much you can do about it. It's above the tree line at the top of your head.
It is, yeah. Leave what you find. A lot of people, like just saying with the flowers and, just look at things. Don't. And again, some places, in most places around here, this is not even too big of an issue if you're camping up in the mountains because, you're not going to be able to have a campfire. Respect wildlife and be considerate of other visitors, includes noise and other issues as well.
Let nature's sounds prevail. Experience nature up close and personal. So you can see here, this is a camper out on the coast with my daughter, and here's the deer running right through our camp. And of course, as I end all my talks here, to also experience the many-colored grace of God, and as God paints a beautiful picture of blues and greens and grays and whites.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you,
Dale. So it looks like we've got 10 minutes to get to Vespers.
Yeah. Well, I got 12. But it's
oh, okay. And we have Wilderness First Aid tomorrow night.